This is the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the fourth quarter of 2024. Our lead article for this particular issue is How Becoming a Christian Has Given Me Purpose. Let me talk to you from my own perspective about how becoming a Christian has given me purpose. In the previous quarter of this journal, I shared with you how becoming a Christian gave me a meaningful purpose in life and led me to a career in a ministry. As we think about purpose in life, we must consider whether there is another way to find meaningful purpose. I'm in a unique position to address this because the other members of my family have tried several very different means of finding purpose in life. My father was an atheist, an academic who first attempted to find purpose in his education. He was a disciple of John Dewey and graduated from Columbia University in New York. He was a full professor and the head of the philosophy department at Indiana University in the School of Education. At a state university, there is a publish or perish mantra that rules the life of a university professor. My father met this requirement with glee, publishing a variety of articles. He spent a year in Europe studying how educational institutions in England, Russia, Germany, France, and Italy handled religion. He left his children in the care of a graduate student at Indiana University while he gathered the data that eventually became a book. He retired from Indiana University, where he was highly honored and respected. How did this lifelong work fulfill any real purpose for my father? His work was completely outdated before he died. Institutions overseas and in America basically discounted religion altogether, removing it from any participation in state-supported educational institutions. My father spent his last years carving animal figures out of wood. He was forgotten by Indiana University and lost his voice in academia. He was a great professional success. But now his influence is minimal and his legacy is forgotten. I had two younger brothers, one 10 years younger than me and one 12 years younger. The older of the two brothers became an officer in the Air Force and flew training jets and then helicopters. One of the bases he was assigned to in Arizona was closed, so the Air Force sent him to Rantoul, Illinois, to be a closing officer of the Air Force base there. While in Rantoul, he established a museum on the base, which was closed during his lifetime. He was very successful in seeing that the base was removed from military use. Because of Agent Orange, the chemical defoliant used in Vietnam, he developed Parkinson's. He was eventually mustered out of the Air Force, but never advanced in rank beyond being a major. He faced a life with little financial reserves and moved into a military nursing home. In the middle of all this, he suffered a divorce and bouts of depression. Near the end of his life, he told me he no longer wanted to be associated with the atheism of his father, and I was able to baptize him into Christ. He left this life at peace with God, but saying his only purpose was to close bases, which are now long forgotten. My youngest brother totally bought into our father's atheism and refused any connection to God or Jesus Christ. This caused him to be uncomfortable with anyone and resulted in depression, which ultimately caused him to be divorced by his wife and alienated from his two sons. Alcohol became an addiction for him, and he lived alone on a lake in Canada in a cabin our father had bought many years before. He died alone of heart failure, feeling his life had no purpose. Is there any other option for cases like the three I have just cited? The Bible has numerous passages that deal with the purposes God has given for every life. Old Testament passages such as Exodus 9:16, Jeremiah 32:19, and Proverbs 19:21 refer to God's desire for his people to have a purpose. Romans 8:28 says, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those that love him who have been called according to his purpose." Ephesians 3:16 tells us that God has an eternal purpose, which he accomplished in Christ Jesus. Ephesians 6:12-13 tells Christians they are the major players in the war between good and evil. The entire book of Job describes one man's role in that war. How does becoming a great politician, educator, military warrior, or scientist bring purpose if we engage in these things without any connection to our Creator? How long will our accomplishments last if we have no connection to God. I am thankful that after several false starts, I found a role in life that has been full of purpose and that will endure for many years after I die. Laborers, teachers, doctors, and professionals who live a life of service to God and support others fulfill the purpose for which God created them. Through the lives of those they served in the church, each of us can fulfill our purpose in living, avoiding a life of futility and frustration. Have you found the purpose for your life? Life is hard, but there is hope. But I doubt that anyone would argue with that. Jesus knew about this and spoke of it. In Matthew 24, verses 4 through 9, Jesus told his disciples, quote, "Watch out that no one deceives you. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation will rise against nation. There will be famines and earthquakes. You will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me." End of quote. He goes on to say that scammers will be present, and the love of money will grow cold. Non-Christians will view those words of Jesus as a reason to reject Christianity. Many of today's issues are rooted in the fact that life is hard. Life challenges can lead to suicide, prostitution, drug use, alcoholism, and mental illness. The most fundamental reason for this dilemma is that there is no purpose in living for those who reject the teachings of Christ in the Bible. Beginning in the book of Genesis, the Bible presents the theme that a war is going on between good and evil. It starts in the Garden of Eden and is portrayed in the book of Job. The New Testament clearly defines that conflict. Ephesians 6:12 tells us, quote, "Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers of this dark world and the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly realms," end of quote. Ephesians 3, verses 9 through 12 explains the purpose of the church in this war. Atheism dodges the issue of evil by simply denying that it exists, but reality says otherwise. Yeah, life is hard, but for Christians, life is the worst thing you will ever have to face. Romans 8:28 tells us that God will take the awful things in life and make good things come from them. Sometimes those good things are spiritual, which is what life is all about. Don't defeat the purpose of your existence by denying the reality of the spiritual warfare in this life. The tip of a boulder. Several years ago, I was mowing the grass at our meeting house and noticed a rock sticking up where I intended to mow. The mower blade nicked it when I went over it. Our members had been taking turns mowing, and I wondered why no one had bothered to move the rock. I asked the maintenance guy if it was okay if I dug the rock out and filled the hole with dirt so it wouldn't keep hitting it. He just smiled and says, "Have at it." And I learned that the rock was the tip of a boulder. Here in Michigan, we have rocks and boulders carried in by the glaciers. When I went to work with the shovel, I found that this was more of a job than I thought. By the time I got to the bottom of the boulder, I had dug an enormous hole and needed to use my truck to pull it out. The story reminds me of people. I recently talked with a neighbor about a neighborhood issue and noticed a tear rolling down his cheek and a clenched fist at his side. Our conversation stopped and I asked him if he was okay. I learned that his wife had just left him for another man, and the neighborhood issue was just the tip of the boulder he was dealing with. In 1 Corinthians 5, we read about a congregation where one member was cohabitating with his father's wife, not his mother. The congregation not only tolerated the situation, but was puffed up, meaning they were laughing it off. That sin was a rock everyone could see, and Paul said that even the pagans could see it. The rest of the letter in 1 Corinthians shows a boulder of problems. In chapter 11, verses 18 through 30, we read of division, selfishness, drunkenness, and a bunch of people who were weak and sickly. In America today, we have violent protest, corruption in our government, racism, profanity in our movies and music, and no fixed standard of morality. Those are just the tip of a boulder that has become very large. Even many churches today have become entertainment venues instead of promoters of God's will. This is the tip of the boulder that is the lack of belief in God and in the Bible as a guiding force for life. You can't read Galatians 3:28 or study John 4, verses 5 through 43 and not see that God calls us to be one with him. John the Baptist said, quote, I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Get ready for the coming of the Lord. End of quote, John 1:23. This ministry is saying very much the same thing. We urge the world to understand that we are on a road to disaster. The rocks of division, immorality, and war are just the tip of a boulder that must be removed. Christian minimalism. One of the earmarks of Christianity is the level of involvement it calls for. When someone asked Jesus Christ, what is the greatest commandment? He replied, quote, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. That's pretty hard to miss. This actually is a quote from Deuteronomy 6:5 and is unpopular in our world today. Our culture expects Christian minimalism and has coined labels to denigrate Christian involvement in life. So-called, quote, Christian nationalism, end of quote, is called evil and destructive. Christian involvement in the military has been suppressed based on it being too exclusive. Issues such as gender transformation, abortion, and gay lifestyle choices are promoted and held in esteem in America today. The government shuts down any attempt by Christians to point out the consequences of these choices. The media and politicians apply words such as extreme to anyone that is identified as having Christian values. It is essential to point out that no one following the teachings of Christ would advocate for Christianity being a part of any political persuasion. Jesus made it clear in a declaration that his followers would, quote, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and unto God the things that are God's, end of quote, Matthew 22:21. In the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5-7, Jesus tells his followers to love their enemies, turn the other cheek, and to go the second mile. Christians might not agree with everyone else's choice, but Jesus forbids any physical action against that individual. What bothers those who attack Christianity is the level of commitment that it promotes. One of the great parables that Jesus taught tells of a man going on a business trip who gives three servants things to take care of while he is gone. One gets 5 units, one gets 2 units, and the other gets 1 unit, according to their ability, the Bible says. When the man returns, the one given 5 units and the one given 2 units received the same praise because they used what they were given. The man with 1 unit receives condemnation because he buried what the master loaned to him and didn't use it. You ought to read that, Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30. Instead of Christian minimalism, committed Christians will give 100%. To promote the teachings of Christ. This upsets the media and some politicians who then try to destroy Christianity, and that is happening in America. At the same time, some call themselves Christian but want to be minimal in their involvement. They ask questions like, well, quote, do I have to attend? End of quote. How much do I have to give? End of quote. What minimum can I do? We don't ask what is the minimum I must do to have a good marriage. We don't ask, what is the least I can do to be a good parent, a good soldier, a good teacher? Why is our culture so opposed to those and act on 100% constructive action? The answer is the skeptics want us to practice Christian minimalism because they feel threatened when Christians live out their faith 100%. Change your mindset. Both believers and non-believers are affected by their mindsets. In the 55 years our ministry has existed, we have found that the mindset of people on both sides of issues is the source of conflict between atheists and believers, evolutionists and creationists. Dr. Catherine Beals, an educational expert, distinguishes between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. The fixed mindset leads to the following ways of thinking. I know best. This is good enough. I'll never be that smart. I want to avoid making mistakes. I give up. As you hear those 5 statements, Consider what you hear from older people in established congregations today. They reject any proposal to do things differently, even though there is no scriptural reason for not doing or using another method. The same problem exists with evolutionists who are so fixed in their mindset that they refuse to listen to any attempt to harmonize belief in God with their evolutionary theories. On the other hand, the growth mindset leads to these ways of thinking. Is this my best work? Mistakes help me learn. Feedback is valuable. I improve with practice. I won't give up. Jesus commonly used the phrase, "What do you think?" The Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5-7 is full of admonitions of his day to think with a growth mindset. Jesus Christ ran into the issue of mindsets as he dealt with people in matters of faith. The Pharisees and Sadducees had fixed mindsets, and they crucified Jesus because he didn't fit their mindset. At the same time, Gentiles had a growth mindset, wanting to know more and being willing to change. For example, the story of Cornelius in Acts 10 shows that he had a growth mindset and was willing to change. In Paul's missionary journeys, he found that Jews had a fixed mindset, while the Gentiles had a growth mindset. The church today is struggling with issues of mindsets. Young people have a growth mindset, and older congregations have a fixed mindset. This is manifested in many ways. The real problem is that congregations with a fixed mindset will eventually die out. From the beginning, Christianity with its growth mindset grew and is still growing. Fixed mindset congregations will die when the fixed mindset members die. But the Lord's church will continue to grow and expand. Our ministry is about growth and learning. Won't you join us? A Conflict That Should Not Exist by Roland Ernst. We have said many times that science and the Bible are friends. We need both for an enjoyable life. Unfortunately, many believers reject science because they think it conflicts with faith, and many unbelievers reject faith because they believe it contrary to science. These are false ideas of a conflict that should not exist. The truth is that both science and the Bible testify to God's existence. Science helps us understand the physical world. Physics and chemistry give us new and better ways to do things. Medical science helps us live healthier and longer lives. We need science because it benefits us. Likewise, the Bible benefits us in many ways. It tells us how to live fulfilled lives in peace and harmony with each other and the natural world. Most importantly, the Bible tells us about Jesus Christ and how we can live beyond this physical existence. Dr. John Lennox is an emeritus fellow of mathematics and philosophy of science at Oxford University. In a debate with leading atheist Richard Dawkins, Lennox illustrated the difference between science and biblical faith very simply. He said, quote, "Science can tell you what will happen when you put arsenic in your Aunt Lucy's tea, but it cannot tell you whether or not you should." That simple statement suggests why this is a conflict that should not exist. Atheists exist that a person does not have to believe to have a moral life. It is true that sometimes atheists live lives that appear more morally upright than some who claim to be believers. However, without a faith in God and in His Word, what is the objective basis for deciding what is right or wrong? We can't make valid moral choices without a moral compass to tell us which direction to go. Science gives us many things that make our lives in this world better. The Bible and faith also improve our lives and the lives of those around us. But faith also gives us some things that science cannot. Our faith in God and the Bible gives us a purpose and reason to live and enjoy this life. Beyond that, it gives us hope for a better existence without pain and suffering that we face now. In science, we find solutions to make life more enjoyable. In the Bible, we discover a reason for our existence and a hope for a better future. The animosity between science and faith is a conflict that should not exist. Salvation by Thayer Solisbury. Sometimes even believers seem to understand the connection between conviction and outreach. Some time ago, an article in The Atlantic cited Michael, a Dartmouth student and atheist, who said, quote, "I really can't consider a Christian a good moral person if he isn't trying to convert me. Christianity is something that if you really believed it, it would change your life and you would want to change the lives of others. I haven't seen too much of that." Similarly, Penn Jillette, an atheist illustrationist and comedian, said, quote, "I don't respect people who don't proselytize. I don't respect that at all. If you believe there is a heaven and a hell, and people could be going to hell and not getting eternal life or whatever, and you think that it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward, how much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? Don't underestimate the role of convictions in changing lives. Becoming convinced that the gospel is true is a valid step in motivating Christian ministry, outreach, witness, evangelism, church planting, and world missions. Why do we expend so much energy, time, and treasure in these endeavors? Because we are convinced that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and that we can only come to the Father through him. Let this truth sink into our souls, and we'll find it affecting every aspect of our lives, taking every thought captive, as the Apostle Paul might say so, that sinners might be saved." 2 Corinthians 10:5. This next article is written by a man who is an inmate and has been impacted by our prison ministry. We have around 5,000 prisoners we're studying with throughout the United States. And there is one of them, and he sent this article he wrote, which I thought might be something that everybody would enjoy reading. The article is titled, "How God Used George Lemaitre," and I can't give you Larry's last name because the fact that he's incarcerated. Belgium-born Georges Lemaitre was a young and an upcoming engineering student when Germany invaded his homeland in 1914. Out of necessity, he put his education on hold to serve in the Belgium Army, where he fought in the Battle of Usur. Afterward, he studied physics at the Catholic University in Louvain. Then he was admitted to the Catholic Seminary in Malines, where Cardinal Mercer granted him special permission to study Einstein's general theory of relativity. In 1923, after completing his advanced education with a clerical collar in place, Lemaitre crossed the English Channel to work under the famous Sir Arthur Eddington at Cambridge Observatory. By 1925, Lemaitre's grasp of how general relativity fits into our cosmic history exceeded that of Einstein himself. While Einstein stubbornly fought to maintain Aristotle's static universe theory, in 1927 Lemaitre published an article in the obscure French journal suggesting that available Doppler redshift data indicated our universe is expanding. In 1929, Edwin Hubble released observations obtained by his assistants at his observatory on Mount Wilson that confirmed Lemaitre's little-known predictions. Hubble's announcement came as no surprise to Lemaitre, who had already shown in equation number 23 of his 1927 paper that distant galaxies were getting further away from Earth. In a manner predictable by the equation V equals HD, where V is the velocity of recession, D is the distance the object is from Earth, and H is the experimentally determined constant. This relationship became known as Hubble's law, with H being known as Hubble's constant. The calibration details needed to be tweaked, but by the end of 1929, the cosmological community was starting to realize that our universe was indeed expanding, not static, as Aristotle and Einstein believed. Also, they began to ponder many theories that would explain away our universe's expansion, or at least the appearance of expansion. In 1930, Sir Arthur Eddington called a meeting of the Royal Astronomical Society to consider these matters. Also, he ordered that an English translation of Lemaitre's overlooked 1927 paper be published for all to study. By 1931, Einstein had conceded that his inclusion of a fudge factor, sometimes called the cosmological constant, on the left side of his equation for general relativity was the biggest blunder of his life. Although Einstein removed the cosmological constant from his equation, Lemaitre felt it needed to be removed to the equation's right side, not eliminated. Lemaitre's preliminary thought processes were published in May of 1931 in the edition of Nature in a 457-word article titled The Beginning of the World from the Point of View of Quantum Theory. Here, Lemaître explained that we must consider the interplay between quantum mechanics, general relativity, and gravity to understand how our universe began. Subsequently, Lemaître explained that a cosmological constant was needed on the right side of the equation for general relativity to account for the energy variations our universe had gone through during its different stages of expansion. Next came the shocker. Lemaître hypothesized that the expansion that was being observed first began with an explosion of a primal atom, an explosion he believed should still be evidenced by faint traces of cosmic background radiation, which Lemaître likened to the smoke one sees lingering on a cold day after an explosive display of fireworks. His theory initially was somewhat crude, but Lemaître had the best understanding of general relativity and its cosmic implication for anyone then alive, bar none. Before long, his theory almost perfectly matched today's full-blown Big Bang theory. Not surprisingly, by 1950, Lemaître had become accepted as the father of Big Bang cosmology. Due to his also being a Catholic priest, agnostic and atheistic cosmologists were skeptical of his motives. However, as time passed, Lemaître gained more clout within the scientific community. The Catholic Church also found that science Lemaître had discovered, not invented, had great relevance. This prompted Pope Pius XII to approve the Big Bang theory in 1951 as a scientific confirmation of the first few verses of Genesis. Just 3 days before Lemaître's death in June of 1966, he was notified of what became the cosmological shot heard around the world. Bell Lab researchers' accidental discovery of the cosmic background radiation left over from the Big Bang, just as Lemaître had predicted. Lemaître was still conscious and could now gleefully rest in peace. In 2018, an International Astronomical Union honored Lemaître by changing the name Hubble's Law to Hubble-Lemaître Law, with H being known as the Hubble-Lemaître constant. God has a way of using certain people to help non-scientists and scientists alike appreciate the beauty and awe of the universe. He is so perfectly tweaked for life as we know it. George Lemaître was 70 years ahead of his time, and his contributions remain an eternal tribute to our Creator. Scientist and God. Editors note, the atheist attempt to suggest that all scientists are intelligent people who have rejected faith and do not believe in God. The fact is that some of the most productive scientists who have ever lived are believers in God, and we share some of the thoughts with you in this column with each issue. Our scientist for this issue is Alan Sandage, who passed away in 2010, an American astronomer. He received his PhD from Caltech and was the senior staff member emeritus with the Carnegie Observatory in Pasadena, California. He was considered the preeminent observational cosmologist of his time, receiving the Crawford Prize, which is equivalent to the Nobel Prize in astronomy, and the National Medal of Science, the Eddington Medal, and the Helen Warner Prize for Astronomy. Sandage is known for calculating the rate at which the universe expands and its age by observing stars. And here's what he said, quote, "I was practically an atheist in my childhood. Science is what led me to the conclusion that the world is much more complex than we can explain. I can only explain the mystery of existence to myself by the supernatural." Cynthia's Corner with Cynthia Clayton. Can humans have a purpose for living without God? There seem to be more non-believers in the world than there are believers. How do people who don't believe in God and Jesus live their lives? Do people without Christ have a meaningful purpose in living? What is their standard for right and wrong? Do they live by the, quote, golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, end of quote? How do they treat others? Are there natural consequences for bad behavior, bad choices, or just bad luck? What happens to them when life gets difficult? When work is hard or unsatisfying and money doesn't pay the bills, or when friends and family hurt you or disappoint you or leave you, or worse, when a loved one dies and you have serious health problems, how does a non-believer handle all the ups and downs of life? Some people turn to alcohol, drugs, sex, porn, gambling. anything to drown their sorrows. If there is no purpose in living except for self-gratification and self-fulfillment, and life gets hard, lonely, or painful, why go on? If there is no life after death and no eternal consequences for this life, why not end your life when it becomes too hard to bear? In contrast, Christians have a God-given reason to be alive, no matter what their circumstances. All Christians have a purpose in their lives given by God, Ephesians 3, verses 10 through 12. Most of us cannot preach or teach, but we still have a role in spreading the good news about salvation in Jesus Christ and having a relationship with our Creator in this life and eternally. It is up to all of us to spread God's message of love, forgiveness, joy, and hope. God gives us purpose. He created us to do good deeds, Ephesians 2:10. Serve others and help as many as possible to go to heaven with us. Dandy designs. Baobab trees. Fossil evidence of ancient trees known as baobabs found in Madagascar shows that they were among the Earth's oldest life forms. This genus, known as Adamsonia, had 8 species in Madagascar, Africa, and Northwest Africa. Because of their shape, people called them upside-down trees. The nickname Tree of Life comes from the fact that they can live for thousands of years and grow to huge sizes. The fruits of baobab trees are superfood, and people use their trunks to make fibers for rope or clothing. Baobab's large white flowers open at dusk, attracting bats as pollinators. The branches of the trees are nesting sites for birds. These trees look very different from modern trees. They have a pyramid shape with a large trunk that stores vast amounts of water, and no limbs or leaves except at the top. They might remind you of a giant toadstool, but the shape is ideal for storing water and the safety of birds and bats. DNA studies show that a starting point for the baobab trees in Madagascar, tracking their journey on ocean currents to Australia and Africa, where local conditions shaped them into what we see today. Scientific data shows no connection between baobabs and the gymnosperms like pine trees and modern trees like oaks and palms. Attention has been drawn to the fact that baobab trees are so useful that they are being over-harvested. Genesis 2:9 says, quote, God made all kinds of trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food, end quote. The diversity we see in creation speaks of an intelligent purpose for plants. Everywhere we look, we see the benefits plants provide. Baobabs remind us that we live in an extraordinary place, and we must not let greed, ignorance, and selfishness destroy what God has given us. Trout fins. You know, technology has allowed us to see the design of things in the natural world. Dr. Haibo Dong at the University of Virginia used 3D computer models to study the turbulence created with each fin of a trout. American Scientist magazine states, quote, interactions between swirling eddies created by a swimming trout show how its body is optimally laid out for energy-efficient movement, end of quote. A trout's body is shaped to move through the water with less drag than any other shape. However, the role of various fins is not easy to see. Virtually all fish have a dorsal fin on the back and a caudal fin on its tail. Trout have other fins, including pectoral fins near their heads and pelvic fins near the center of their bellies. Toward the back of a trout's body is a small adipose fin on top and an anal fin on the underside. Researchers have shown that the fin locations increase the thrust the tail produces. The anal fin produces 8.6% more thrust by reducing the drag by 18.6%. Trout fins are designed for efficient swimming. Or as the researchers concluded, quote, the whole trout is optimized for efficient swimming. Other fish have different fin arrangements to match their survival needs. A tuna living in the open ocean has a different layout of fins because it is designed for speed rather than efficiency. Fish that consign existence to the bottom of a lake or river will not have the same fin layout as a tuna or a trout. For example, a catfish has a fin arrangement designed for protection. Those of us who have grabbed a catfish incorrectly may have suffered a painful jab from its fins. Trout fins are designed for efficient swimming since they make long migrations, swimming upstream and sometimes over waterfalls. Our technology allows us to understand the various designs we see in living things. Trout fishermen know that catching a trout differs from catching any other fish because of their muscular mobility. Research has shown that the trout's design shows wisdom, right down to the shape and location of its fins. We suggest that this design is a product of a designer, not blind, opportunistic chance. News and notes. Just right for life. Since astronomers have discovered more than 5,000 exoplanets orbiting stars other than our sun, many insist that there must be life elsewhere in the cosmos. If there is life out there, God created it. But that only speaks to our planet. A Goldilocks planet is at the proper distance from the star, so the temperature is just right for liquid water to exist on its surface. Some exoplanets appear to be in the habitable zones of their stars, but many other factors must also be just right for life to exist. To support life, a planet must be the right size, have a stable orbit inside the habitable zone of the stable star, and have the right atmosphere. It must also have a working plate tectonics and large moon to maintain a stable axis tilt. It must also be in the habitable zone of its galaxy, not near the center, where it would be exposed to lethal gamma-ray burst. Another star system requirement for life would be having outer planets large enough and in the correct position to sweep away asteroids and comets that would bombard an inner planet. To support life, a planet also needs a strong magnetic field to shield the surface from a star's radiation and cosmic rays. The bottom line is that the Earth is a special place, created by God for a special purpose, and is unique among all other known objects in the cosmos. Animal memory capacity. Memory is designed into animals to benefit them and other life forms in their ecosystem. We see an excellent example of partial memory in squirrels who bury massive numbers of acorns, but only remember where they put a fraction of them. The squirrels have enough to eat while they plant trees all over a large area. On the other hand, some life forms, such as Clark's nutcracker, remember virtually 100%. They survive on pinion seeds, and a single bird may hide as many as 30,000 seeds, placing 4 to 5 seeds in each spot. When hungry, the bird will return to each hiding place to get food. When spring arrives, it will have consumed almost all the seeds hidden in thousands of locations. God has given different memory storage capacities in the brains of each creature. In the animal world, the memory capacity is designed to benefit the animals and the environment. Trying to explain that by evolutionary reasoning is difficult. Those of us who believe in God believe it speaks of his wisdom and design in the world around us. Neanderthal data. Past research has not shown that Neanderthals lived together in communities. However, Neanderthal DNA in Siberia indicates a possible community, and some 600 footprints recently found near Normandy, France, indicate a group of adults with children and teenagers. Another interesting discovery is that the communities cared for individuals with deformities or severe injuries, and Neanderthal burials indicate they showed special care to children. The fact that Neanderthals clearly lived more than 6,000 years ago flies in the face of some denominational teaching about Earth's age. The point is that the Bible is silent about how long ago Adam lived. There is also a tendency to make Adam in our physical image when the Bible says Adam is created in God's spiritual image. Since you and I are created in God's image, we all have equal value and demonstrate spiritual characteristics and talents. These include creative ability in art and music, the capacity to worship, empathy, and sympathy and guilt, which have nothing to do with our physical or racial makeup. The new data on Neanderthals shows they demonstrated some of those characteristics, and we have some Neanderthal markers in our DNA. Smoke in the air affects trees. Researchers at Colorado State University have found that even trees are affected by smoke from wildfires, but they have a defense system designed into them. Plant leaves have pores called stomata that do the opposite of our lungs by taking in carbon dioxide and expelling oxygen. However, taking in smoke could interfere with this process. The researchers found that when smoke wafted across the ponderosa pines, the trees responded by closing their stomata, essentially holding their breath. Since these trees are affected by smoke, they have a designed response to what might damage their ability to absorb carbon dioxide. This is just one more example of the incredible planning that went into their creation. MAID and hospice care. And MAID is a sim for medical aid in dying. And it has been accepted in Europe, Canada, and other places. As expected, there have been abuses, and for that reason, the European Court of Human Rights recently ruled that access to assisted suicide is not a human right. Now, the Hospice and Palliative Care Nurses Association, HPNA, has announced a policy change that allows hospice nurses to participate in assisted suicide. The statement reads, quote, "Nursing care for patients considering MAID and their families is crucial to ensure that patients and families are not overly or inadvertently disenfranchised or stigmatized as they proceed with MAID, and that they experience a safe and comfortable death, free from complications." Christians have grave concerns with medically assisted suicide. When hospice nurses are allowed to administer medical aid in dying, how long will it be before they are required to do so, regardless of religious and ethical objections? Medication abortion. Medication abortion is a two-drug cocktail that ends the life of a developing child during the first trimester of pregnancy. It is essential for women considering medication abortion to know what it does and its side effects. The first pill is metoforpristone RU486, which prevents the preborn baby from receiving hormonal support, which is progesterone, essential for development. The second pill, misoprostol, causes the uterus to contract and expel the baby. The process is painful for the woman. The Mayo Clinic says the side effects include vomiting, fever, nausea, chills, diarrhea, and headache. Women may need painkillers to manage pain after a medication abortion. The Mayo Clinic also says that a woman undergoing pill-induced medication abortion needs access to emergency services. Complications include hemorrhaging and infection. A 17-year study showed that of the 423,000 abortions, there were 121,283 that confirmed emergency room visits within 30 days. When humans interfere with God's design, there are always problems, and the miracle of conception and birth is a design that works. Plant neuroscience? Several plant neuroscientists have written papers claiming that plants have intelligence, cognition, and experience pain and other feelings. This is not the work of crackpots, but of reputable scientists writing in professional journals. The so-called plant neuroscientists accuse scientists who reject their claims of being animal chauvinists. If you reject eating plants because they have feelings and experience pain, you will also have to reject eating insects or animals of any kind, such as fish, birds, or even farm animals. That leaves you with nothing to eat. In Genesis 1:29, God tells Adam and Eve, quote, "I have given you every herb bearing seed, and every tree in which there is fruit for food," end of quote. In Genesis 9:3, God told Noah, "Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, even as green plants that I have given you," end of quote. God gave us the capacity to have adequate food and challenged us to manage this environment with intelligence and respect. The fact is that plants do not have neurons. I know people who talk to their plants, but I must admit, I have also spoken to my car when it wasn't working. Whether plants or vehicles, our conversations are for our benefit, not what we are talking to. God has designed plants to feed, shade, and show us beauty. They are not created like us and are not to be worshipped. The sawtooth sawfish, an interesting creature that lives in the ocean off of southern Florida in the Bahamas. The small-toothed sawfish is a member of the ray family, with a snout lined with needle-sharp teeth used to cut vegetation or chop up a predator when it gets too close. The amazing thing about this fish is that babies are born live. And the question is, how can a baby sawtooth avoid cutting up its mother or siblings before birth? Researchers at the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission in Charlotte Harbor have an answer to that question. They found that the baby shellfish's teeth are housed in a sheath while inside the mother. It is essentially the second skin that the small-toothed sawfish sheds about 4 days after birth. The researchers say the sheath feels like paraffin wax, which you can't peel off, but has a slight give. The chemical composition of the sheath shows that it has two layers made of proteins similar to ordinary skin. The ocean is full of living things with incredibly complex and specialized designs, enabling them to exist in unique environments. The lead researcher said it's, quote, a cool thing Mother Nature figured out to protect mom from those calcified teeth and protect siblings from the sword fighting in the uterus. Perhaps it wasn't Mother Nature that figured it out, but an intelligent creator. And that is the end of the Fourth Quarter Journal, 2024. John Clayton has been your reader, and we hope it challenged your thinking and will motivate you to consider carefully how much evidence there is to be encouraged by the fact that this life, for those who believe, is full of purpose and design.